Hello and welcome to the Bosun's Call Woodworking Podcast, episode 18. I am your host, James LeBosun, and today we have for you children's toys, making them and also making things with your kids to get them into the whole woodworking hobby. We have a sailor term and a cool tool for you today, and Esther is here in the studio with me.
Yeah.
Without further ado, let's get cracking. Hello, Esther.
Hi.
How are you?
I am very well.
Excellent. I'm glad my voice has improved because earlier this morning it was awful.
It's very gravelly.
Very gravelly, very deep, very orcish.
Very almost gone.
Yeah, almost gone. But it has later in the day returned, so here we are.
Excellent.
Doing just fine. All right, so for today we have for you the sailor term to run a tight ship, mm-hmm. or a tight ship. Okay, so what does it mean? What do you think it means?
Organized and well run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Coordinated.
Typically today you hear this in the workplace, right? Where it's yes. like the boss runs a tight ship. Refers to a strict captain running a disciplined crew. But the expression originated as common talk for the ship itself.
Oh.
Not the people on it. Tight ship is in tip-top shape,
mm-hmm.
with tight ropes, well-caulked seams, and perfection in every little detail, meaning its voyage would be orderly and controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no sinking in the water.
It's kind of a phrase that derives from the product of, you know, strict leadership, right? Because...
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, this is loose, you know, like, fix that, replace, you know, kind of thing.
Make sure it's tarred well.
Yeah. Hopefully that's the result, and without resentment, but, you know, held to a high standard
mm-hmm.
is a kind of analog to that. So I like it. And we've used it all the time.
Oh, yes.
I'm ever amazed at how many of these phrases come from the age of sail
mm-hmm.
That we don't even really realize. We've used it for
so
long.
Think about it.
Yeah, no, we've lost where it comes from. All right, so what's our cool tool?
What is our cool tool? I don't recognize that.
You don't recognize this?
Well, I know it's fancy and you got it as like a birthday present or something.
I did actually get this as a birthday present and I used the heck out of it. So this is the Woodpecker's Saddle Square. I have the T4. Which is the 5-inch model, which is, you know, in my opinion, it's all you need.
Versatile.
Right? Yeah, 5 inches is enough, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. what's nice about it, you can get longer versions if you need it, but a saddle square is essentially a ruler that then has a 90-degree turn on the edge, so it will sit over the edge, and you can actually mark two sides of a board,
mm-hmm.
And so especially if you're marking all the way around,
mm-hmm.
if you're doing like through tannery or something like that, and you need to be sure that the lines on both sides of a board that you're cutting through are exactly lined up.
Yep.
This does an excellent job. I am very happy with the Woodpecker's tool line. They're all milled aluminum, I believe, and they have lots of different graduations and little holes drilled in the middle at different intervals. I believe these are at 30 seconds. And so you can mark that and you can just kind of scoot the saddle square across the edge of a board and mark a line within that level of accuracy. Very handy. I use it a lot when I'm doing hand tool work and through tannery because the ability that I can easily mark over a line. You can do it with a combination square. It's just a little bit more tedious. So I do like having the saddle square. So that is my cool tool for today.
It's also like a pretty satin matte color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Woodpecker's satin red is very, very nice.
It looks good hanging on the wall in the shop.
And it certainly withstood some punishment too. Because it's very, very chunky, very robust. So I appreciate that about it.
Very beneficial.
Not a sponsor, but I still love their stuff. I have only a couple of things of theirs. I have the combination square and I have the saddle square. What else do I have? Oh, I have their corner squares for carcasses, like cabinet carcasses. I can't remember what the set's called, but it's really cool. And I feel like I'm forgetting something else. Oh, I also have their corner chamfer.
Ah.
And I'm very pleased with all of them. The workmanship is above board and is very, very good stuff. It's a little pricey, but it's the whole like buy once, cry once kind of thing. So today we are talking about kid stuff.
It always looks better when it's made out of wood.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was thinking about this. A lot of people are very weary about plastics and some other stuff. They're not certain about whether it's good or bad, you know. And we certainly haven't included things like lead in the paint of children's toys. No, nothing like that before. So there's certainly no precedent for nasty things being in kids' toys. I don't really know. I don't really know, like, good or bad. Like, most of the toys you get for kids are plastic of one variety or another. But certainly certain wooden toys have endured for a long time. And I've seen some good ones. Some of them are like heirloom antiques that have been passed down. And some of them are, you know, recreations of old ideas. So the first one that springs to mind is the wooden blocks, like your ABC, 1, 2, 3.
Simple and effective.
Mm-hmm. And I've certainly seen plenty of these on Etsy and other places. You can get them custom. What's kind of cool about these is if you get them custom or make them yourself, you can have the blocks spell out names, like family names. You know, you have all the letters you need.
Yeah, but you get a few extra so you can do more with them.
Well, yeah, sure. But you could spell, like, you know, everybody's name in the family and the family name. And then just like some extra letters thrown in there so you can spell out, you know, brother, sister, mom, dad, whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of cool. And there's a load of different ways you could do that. If you have a CNC, you could do it via CNC. If you have a laser engraver, you can do it via laser. You could do it by hand if you're into carving or wood burning. Or you could paint it if you're crafty. Mask it, paint it. Like, there's all kinds of different ways you could make these blocks look fantastic. And then just do, you know, some kind of finish work, sanding and clear coat over the top of them. And you got some nice, big, chunky blocks that will last a long time.
I don't even think the ones I had as a kid were clear coated. Like, they had a little paint on the leather side and that was it. It was just wood.
You definitely want to finish it so you don't get any splinters from whatever wood you're using, because I imagine it was mostly pine or some kind of
smooth.
Yeah, as long as it's smooth, it's fine.
I could also be wrong. It was a very long time ago. Yes. The tactile boards.
Oh, yeah. You told me about these. And I actually made one for our friends.
She loved it.
It's just a series of different textures. And, like, you can do it on a board or you could do it on a big cube or whatever you want, really. But all it is it's a sensory thing. I think this is a Montessori thing.
It can be.
Because Montessori is, like, all the rage and everyone talks about it. And it,
it goes along with the developmental stages of children.
Yeah, I get it.
A little better sometimes than other mainstream things.
Well, and you'll see this in, like, children's books and things like that. They have different textures you can feel and things like that. So it's kind of along those lines where you make a board or an object or something that has like something that's smooth, and something that's rough, and something that's fuzzy, and something that's sticky, and something something that's, you know, and you have all these different textures on it. And then it becomes kind of a game because you're asking, like, can you describe what that is? Oh, that's, you know, this one's smooth and this one's, you know, got some texture to it.
And what else feels like that? Like, and this one's furry, so is the dog.
I did mine with, like, some stick-on sandpaper of various grits, some stick-on foam, leftover foam seal kit. So it was squishy.
But really easy to do with just scraps.
Yep, and most of it was stuff that I had on hand. I did some, it's like the crisscross net type of texture. It's tape for doing drywall. It's drywall tape. And they also had some banded tape.
Yes.
And I put that on there because it's got an interesting texture, but it's kind of smooth on top. And then I put like three different varieties of double-sided sticky tape on there because then you have the sticky textures too. And that was a lot of fun. Just watching her like figure it out and like...
Yep. And then soon she will graduate to the Elmer's glue on the fingers.
Hmm. There's nothing quite like getting, you know, peeling off.
There really isn't.
In one go.
Huge, I mean, kids nowadays just play on their phones. They don't know what they're missing.
Just don't eat it. Yeah.
Well, no, that's disgusting.
Why are you playing on your phone? You could be eating paste.
Not eating.
No, tactile. Just peeling. Yeah, just peeling it
touching
off.
Touching your fingers and taking away again. Mm-hmm. Keeps you entertained
what
for hours.
What better way to keep your children occupied than gluing their fingers together so they can't get into trouble?
It's perfect.
Yeah. the other one I can think about is a rocking horse.
Classic.
Very classic. And this could be something where you could recreate, and there's plans and stuff out there that I know of where you could do this. Or there are some antique ones too.
Oh, yeah.
And then I've seen some kind of new takes on the old concept where now it's like a unicorn or a dragon or...
It's so simple and fun. It lasts for years. Mm-hmm. It tends to retain engagement for years. And yeah, you can do this super, super simple, just a couple boards
mm-hmm.
like stuck together. Or you can go all out and get as... lifelike as you want.
Adjust based on your skill level and time availability.
It's based on a lot of things, but yes, the world's your oyster.
I would personally go for the maybe like a pirate ship, a big rocking pirate ship.
Oh,
what do you think about that? Or like what about a sea monster? We could do a sea monster.
Sea monsters are fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then I think I saw a tauntaun one.
Oh, a tauntaun one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that'd be a contender for sure. Yeah, that would definitely be a contender.
But I love sea monsters. The ever-present crib.
You could make your own crib. I think most people will purchase their own because there's plenty of good models out there you can assemble in there. They're just fine unless there's something really, really specific that you're looking for.
I found a Viking ship one once.
And there you go. So if you need a Viking ship crib, you know, that would be really cool.
But no, like I know the bedside one for infants.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not actually co-sleeping on the bed, but the baby is right there.
Right, because you don't want to have the baby in the bed because if you roll over,
right.
Yeah.
It's all the advantages co-sleeping with, mm-hmm. not the danger.
Well, and most of the ones that I have seen that you can purchase online that are, you know, metal and plastic and fabric and stuff, kind of like, they're almost like, you know, the chairs, like the... What is it called? Like a baby chair that attaches to the table. Like
yes.
It grabs onto the mattress, but it's not, it doesn't have anything. It's not freestanding by itself.
Yeah, that seems questionable.
Yeah. Well, I've seen both ways. It kind of like straps into the bed and right. like with Velcro or whatever. But for me personally, and this would be one thing I think you could definitely, you know, make and make some money selling mm-hmm. would be to have the bedside cribs and then make it freestanding, but then also have like a Velcro patch or something that, yeah, or like this is what I would do if I was gonna make the crib, right? Because then the baby gets their own kind of area
mm-hmm.
to the side, just to the side of the bed, but close enough to parent that mom probably that there's the whole co-sleeping benefit. And comfy and everything and plush and not gonna roll over. It's got the little, you know, rail on it and everything, but then have adjustable legs because beds mm-hmm. have a little bit of variation in how tall yeah. they are based on what you have for a base and a box spring and everything, and then have a piece that is like Velcro or something that sticks in between the box spring and the mattress that prevents it from tipping.
Perfect.
And even like you could have that somehow really securely attached to the bed.
Yeah, you could figure out how to attach it to the bed frame or something.
So there's no chance that it could tip over or anything. But it's also freestanding, so for whatever reason it loses grip on it, it's got legs, it's stable type of thing. I think you could make some decent money if you had a good design.
You could. You don't see those around very much.
I've never seen that particular design that I've described. So if you hear this and you're so inclined to put that on next door, yeah, then go for it. throw it on Etsy.
All right.
What I should do is I should come up with plans and then sell the plans. That way you don't have to do the brain work.
I mean, we do still have to do things for our Patreon members.
Yes, we do.
All right. The also classic dollhouse.
You could do a lot of things with this. I mean, I would definitely go Addams Family with my dollhouse.
Well, not complicated at all.
No, not at all. I mean, just imagine like cutting all those little shingles for the roof one by one. Yes. Or you could do the Beetlejuice house.
That would be fun.
Yeah, either before or after the renovations in the movie. So you have so you have options.
So many options.
Well, so the dollhouse is another one, right? Because you can customize that.
Yep,
it can be you can get furniture. It depends on how big you want to go into it. And I think the level of interest, because that's a little bit of an older toy.
It can be.
Yeah.
Like, you can still do it for kids. I think that might be where some of the more plastic stuff for the kids comes in, because it is a little less expensive if you don't know that that is where the interests are going to lie.
Yes.
Or that's where you pull out the super simple one, like, here's like a few 2x4s and some veneer or whatever.
Well, I think most of that you'd be doing with like basswood, like hobby wood and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then like putting it together, and you could probably work on it and get gauging on the level of interest.
Like, yeah, for how like much the 2-year-old, just slap it together and see if she likes it.
But it's definitely, it's like anything else where you're in that dilemma between, do I purchase or do I make? Because it's either time spent making money, and then you spend said money slash time, because it's an equivalent thing, right? Money is your time on the thing, or you spend your time to make the thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, which one has more value for you?
Well, and then like, how complicated are you going to get with all of the little things you can add? Mm-hmm. Like, lights and furniture, and
you can get really into it.
Oh, you can. Like,
there's some super realistic dollhouse furniture and stuff.
I definitely haven't come across any of those on Instagram.
Well, and so this makes me think of the little bookcase models, where you it's like
those are exactly
it's like the one that I remember seeing first was Diagon Alley from the Harry Potter series, and it's like a book. I don't know, it's maybe 3 inches wide, but it looks like an alleyway with all the brick faces for all the different shops, and the shop signs hanging in it, and there's little lights and stuff in it, and it's this little kind of model relief thing that fits on your bookshelf.
I want one.
I mean, that maybe that's the thing, is if they have the itch for making miniature things that are cool and fun to look at, then you know, that's
it's a fun miniature for you.
You could do that instead, but it depends. There's all kind. There's a whole another level.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Super. Or you could do the photography. Have you seen this? Where they speed up the film a little bit, and then they kind of blur the edges. And they make real things look like tiny things.
I have not seen that. We'll have to look that up later.
It's like a cinematography or videography format where it makes like real life things
look small.
Shot from a distance, look small. Huh. Like it's a motion capture.
Nice.
Or, time lapse.
Okay.
Yeah, like the Demolition Derby.
Oh,
I saw one with the Demolition Derby. I think you saw that too.
Yes.
Where they look like little, cool. They look like little toy cars. The only way you can tell is like the people that are in the video are actually moving around. And you're like, if that was actually a model, that guy would just be like hands to the sides, like shuffling around.
Right.
But it's very cool. It's kind of like the reverse of that with miniatures, because I've also seen photography of some miniatures or dollhouses or dioramas where it looks like it's a real thing from a certain distance.
It makes movie sets a lot easier.
Yeah, it's that whole thing where it's like, it is like movie quality where at a certain distance with a little bit of haze around it, you really can't tell if it's real or if it's real scale or not.
Isn't that what they did for the ships in space in Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. For most of the things they did.
And Star Trek and everything.
And the golden era of film was a lot of like painting on glass and making models and all this other kind of stuff. And it was just hyper realistic. And it was big enough to hide those. You've got me off on a whole tangent now.
I mentioned Star Wars. I'm sorry.
It all began with the mention of Tauntauns for the Rocking Horse. I guess we're doing that.
Obviously.
I think that is the real advantage to doing it yourself is you don't necessarily have to be stuck on getting a rocking horse.
It's true.
You could have a rocking Tauntaun or
depending on your rocking, child's or your interests.
Or a rocking Rancor or whatever you want.
Ooh, that could be interesting.
Versus, you know, and then it's like if you do it, you might as well like save whatever plans you made for it.
A hippogriff.
Oh, a hippogriff would be good.
Yeah.
You have to teach your kids you got to bow before they get in it. Otherwise, they get mauled.
Challenge accepted. All right.
Couple of nerds here on the air.
Next, a climbing arch. Is that like a Pickler triangle?
No, it's basically like a big like rocking bed.
Mm.
But it's not big. It's tiny, but because it's for kids. But no, it's like a half circle.
Okay.
But it's padded. What am I trying to say? It's upholstered.
Okay.
Yeah, I have words today. Upholstered on the inside. So it's like a, you know, they can climb into it and they can sit in all kind of different ways or something like that.
Huh.
There's like a whole bunch of these on Etsy or wherever you go type of thing. And some of them are laser cuts and it's a kit you can buy. And other ones are, you know, plans or whatever. You can purchase it.
Cool.
That's the idea is you can sit there and do whatever. You can climb around on it and it rocks back and forth.
Cool.
Yeah. That's another Montessori thing, apparently.
You know, they got some good stuff. And the arch.
Oh, so I have two of these on there. So the rocker is what I was just talking about. But the climbing arch is usually it's a couple of things. One of them is an arch. So it's a couple. It's two arches that are joined by a series of dowels along their length across to make this archway. And then another one that's like two V's. Well, it'd be like an A.
That would be the Pickler triangle.
The Pickler triangle. See, I don't know what these things are called.
And you can also add like slides and stuff to it.
But basically what it is a jungle gym.
Yes.
It's a wooden jungle gym, like a tiny sized jungle gym of like, and it's rearrangeable because there's a straight piece.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a pyramid kind of piece, and there's an arch piece, and it's all like a bunch of dowels that hold them together. And then there's like a ladder that's the same width or slightly less that can like attach to both of them to connect the two of them. You can climb across them.
Yep.
So it's got a little bit of variability in it.
But it also works for a very young age range.
But yeah,
you can. The beginning of climbing because it's small enough to be safe.
Yeah, but you can climb all over it. You can rearrange it so it's new and interesting.
And then you can take it apart and store it.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen a ton of these. Oh, and it wouldn't be difficult to make.
Nope.
Because all you have to do is make the arch and the V and drill a whole bunch of holes and get a whole bunch of dowels and then glue the dowels in and then make the other piece and everything. As long as it's nice and sturdy, when you're done with it, good to go.
As long as it can hold the adult making it.
I think that probably a bit much. I think if I walked across it, it wouldn't do so well.
Maybe not walking.
It might, though. I mean, they look fairly sturdy. I mean, the dowels had to have been like...
They're meant to last.
Inch and a quarter. Yeah.
Okay. Isn't the triangle one of the stronger things, or am I making
No, the arch is the strongest.
The arch is the strongest.
Arch is the strongest shape.
I'm just wrong on all the things.
Well, you're not an engineer, so I think you get a pass.
So what type of finishing, sealing, additional considerations should you think about with children specifically in mind?
Yeah, if you're going to make a children's toy product, you have to put some thought into what children do to things.
Chew on them.
So the first one, so you know what lumber you're picking, and it doesn't have to be fancy. They're not going to be like, rich, you know, African mahogany, you know.
Yeah, don't do that. I mean, if you have the budget for that and that's what you want to do, more power to you.
Yeah, go for it.
Don't use oleander. That's poisonous.
Well, and that's my next point is you don't want to use anything that you wouldn't use for a cutting board, say, mm-hmm. because if you do end up chewing on it, then yeah. So, but you don't have to. You may be inclined to go for something that's a little bit tougher, like a hardwood, because softwoods will dent and take damage. But then again, it's a kid's toy. Who cares?
It's meant to be dented.
Yeah.
It shows character.
But certainly not anything that's treated or anything that you wouldn't use as a cutting board. Avoid those. And that's pretty easy to find, like via Google search, you know, what not to use for a cutting board or anything like that. But certainly don't be like getting treated fence posts and cutting chunks out of those and then turning them. No, just no. If it looks green when you cut it, like bright green because it has chemicals in it, don't use it. For God's sake, don't use pallets for any of this. Don't use pallets, period. I'm going to have to come up with like merch later that says pallets bad, you know, or something on there because I'm just, oh, I'm so against it. I've watched something else recently where they were doing
not
that.
Not good for Stop children it. To chew on.
And then obviously it you want it to be the edges rounded over. You want it to be free of any chips or chunks missing. You want it really uniform and smooth all the way around. You don't want any chances of it's anything splintering off. You don't want kids with splinters.
I mean, they're going to get splinters.
Well, you know what I mean, though. Like, sand it, smooth it, round the
Try
edges.
Try to prevent it.
Yeah, no, but yeah. So if you're making blocks or something like that, like, definitely go through all the normal finishing steps as you would for any furniture piece so that when you run your hand across the edge of it, you're not picking up splinters or anything like that.
For sure.
You want to be careful when you're deciding what to use to seal it with.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I would probably encourage you to go with something that's more natural and renewable.
Paste wax.
So yeah, something like paste wax or just linseed oil or something like that that's food grade. That way, if they do chew on it or anything like that, you know, they're not like chewing on, you know, polyurethane and eating some polyurethane or something like that. Obviously, if it's something different, like a rocking horse, you don't really expect to endure that kind of abuse. You could go with something like that to seal it so it will last for a very long time. But if it's something for really small kids, I would probably tend towards, depending on what the toy is, something that is food safe that I would be comfortable using on something like a cutting board. And then anything else that takes more use and abuse, you know, you could use whatever your normal finishing stuff is. And that will help with the, you know, the surface retaining its texture and not fraying up or splintering and stuff like that. And then just depending on what it is, obviously size, because you don't want small bits with small kids because they eat everything. And
like dogs.
Or anything, and you have to think about wear and tear too, right? If you're making something and you have a small piece that could easily snap off of it and then become a choking hazard, mm-hmm. you kind of have to think like worst case scenario, if I grabbed this and just like chucked it on the floor as hard as I could, what would happen? And then
kids would never do that.
Think about it that way. And, you know, even with if things do break, you know, you want to remove them because based on how it breaks, it could end up sharp and stuff like
but
that.
But that's so. Just part of parenting. And
yeah. But not, I mean, the same thing is with plastics or anything else, right? If it does actually snap, you could end up with sharp edges. So obviously supervision, you know, is important.
Not sword fighting with pieces afterwards.
Oh, we'll get to that. No,
that's
sword
a different
fighting
age
for
group.
Sure. Yeah, different age group. Yeah, but obviously age appropriate, right? You have to kind of take that into consideration.
Oh, I missed part two.
That it's age appropriate. Yes.
How would you make money with these?
So if you had plans, you could either make a run of these and make several of them, whatever it is, you know, the bedside crib, or if you wanted to put out there that you're willing to make custom blocks and you could pre-make all the blocks and even finish them to a certain point, depending on how you're going to put down the letters, you know, lasers, CNC, whatever. You could do a lot of that, and then you make them to order, because a lot of stuff that's made to order, like custom stuff, that's kind of rolled into the price.
Right.
It's not like you can buy blocks and then you can buy this. It's kind of all put together. But people like customized stuff.
Well, and it would also be easier to make like a bulk thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have to customize it, that's just a little on the end where the biggest project is already ready to go.
Yeah, you could definitely do that too.
Like my family wants 14 extra S's, and that's really easy to whip out because the rest of the ones are done.
Mm-hmm. 14 extra S's?
It's the first thing that popped in my head. I don't know why.
What is your last name? Slytherin.
I might have been doing a Harry Potter thing before this, and that might have popped in.
My last name is Yeah.
Hiss. You hiss from Robin Hood.
I speak snake. Yeah, obviously online is the best way to do it, but also had some success with Nextdoor. Mm-hmm. With neighbors and friends and things like that, kind of put the word out.
Everyone in our town is having kids.
Yes. And so, you know, if you have a good marketplace like that, anything that you have a good idea about making from any scale, from blocks and rattle toys or whatever you decide to make, you know, if it's original and interesting and unique, you know, you need unique New York. I can't even do that one. Well, that's really what sells, right? Is something that's unique and different.
Yes.
Because I can go to any box store and buy the thing that everybody buys, like the little pyramid of donuts that you have to put together, you know, but it's like, give me something different type of thing, mm-hmm. or something that's custom. Like that's what people are going to pay the money for, you know, some like the bedside crib, if it has way better features. And it's all, you know, wooden and gorgeous and it's going to last forever type of thing. Mm-hmm. Then people are going to pay more for that.
Yep.
The hardest part about any of those projects will be pricing.
Pricing and marketing.
But then if you have other crafty people that are interested in, you know, you could also consider selling the plans, because that's another thing people make money on.
Absolutely.
Yep.
You should do that.
I will.
All right. Tell me about your childhood playground.
Oh, wow. So growing up with a woodworker dad, I had the best playground in the neighborhood.
I mean, mine might have been better.
Oh, okay. Okay, here we go.
Because I also
I will tell you about mine, and then you can tell them about yours, and then we'll let them decide, our audience, which one was better. All right, so growing up, this would have been like ages 6 through 9. We bought an awful house that was like, I don't know. we basically bought a flop house, and
you gotta do what you gotta do.
And part of the agreement was that we were going to help basically flip this house for a discount on rent, and it worked like a dream, because my dad formerly had a handyman business, and he was a woodworker, and he knows all kinds of things. And so not only did we fix up the house, but he, sidetrack here for a minute. I distinctly remember my sister and I being human weights for the leveling apparatus that my dad had put together, which is basically a 5-foot board with a rope attached to either end. And the board was, I don't know, 10 foot wide, and we would sit on either side of the board, and he would shout left, right, and he would dragging the board across the yard that we had just completely cleared of, like, it was just choked with old brush and dog hair and junk and stuff, and we cleared it all out, and we were leveling it to put in grass. And I remember him pulling us across the yard, and he would shout which way he needed us to go to grade the backyard. So anyway,
and hey, tripped down memory lane. You got to pretend your father was a horse. Win-win all around.
So by the end of all of that, we ended up with a 1, 2, 3-story playhouse. that was wrapped around a bottle brush tree that was all wonky and you could climb because it was kind of bent over and this really like low arc thing, so you could climb all over it. And the bottom level was a sandbox that was completely enclosed with green like construction netting so the cats couldn't get in and just poop and all of it. And then it had a weighted drawbridge that opened and closed it. So you'd have to push the drawbridge down to get out, and then it would automatically close because of the weight on a pulley system. There was a trap door from the bottom level, which was a sandbox, to the second level, which was like, you know, like observation deck, which then had a bridge to...
We didn't have a bridge.
It had a bridge to the slide that went down into the garden on the other side. And then there was another trap door that went to the observation deck or the crow's nest on the top, where you could look over the retaining wall and see, you know, pretty much everything. And then off all of that was a beam that had like two slides and a tire on the very end. Well, no, two slides, a set of rings and like a bar, and then a tire on the end. So it was pretty legit. Like
that was very cool.
We always had like all the kids like, hey, can we come over and play the thing? So I mean, that was like half the fun, I think, for my dad, was just being like the guy that had, you know, the coolest playground house.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
We were out in the country and there weren't any other kids. But we came home from vacation with my mom and dad had built us a playhouse as a surprise. I think it was all reclaimed stuff.
Okay.
So it was mostly just like the downstairs, like it wasn't a sandbox per se. It was stuff that we could just, I mean, it was dirt we could dig, and we were all about digging tunnels and moats and our own stuff. So, but the whole second thing was an observation thing, and there were also eucalyptus trees that we could climb. So it was more simple.
So two story for yours?
It was two story.
Swings?
No, we had other swings elsewhere that we could use that were a little beefier than he was able to attach to that. Well, not able, but we had access to other ones that were bigger and better.
No reason to reinvent the wheel there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why do that? So yeah, a little more simple, but hey, many a pot of leaf and Indian paintbrush stew was made in that playhouse.
Witchcraft.
Kids these days, like if you haven't just taken a Goodwill pot and mixed all the things in it, are you really living? Like, what have you done with your life?
Yeah, they're on their tablets now. I remember having a whole handful of Matchbox cars and having, there was like a trench or something that we had dug. And I carved out of the side of that trench, like a whole vertical city that the cars could drive around. Like, you know, like the most dangerous road in the world kind of thing. Like that's what those Matchbox cars were going around.
My brother made a legit Jurassic Park.
That's
like,
cool.
He dug out, it was huge. He dug out moats for everything and he refilled it like every day. There were moats in between all of the...
You got to keep the dinosaurs in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, life finds a way.
Right? Like, he did it way better than the movie. Everyone had a moat around their little enclosure. And little yarn fences. It was brilliant. I think that was one of our first movies.
I remember... Oh my gosh, we're going off on a tangent.
Anyways.
I remember my dad reading us Jurassic Park.
My dad wouldn't let us.
Oh yeah. No, it was wild. And all the H.G. Wells. Imagine like being six and being read Dr. Moreau's Island. All right, anyway, enough of that side tangent.
Okay, teeter-totters. The other way to your friends flying.
Yes. We all need a little danger when we're kids,
we do.
You know? I think that, you know, all that stuff, you're like, I don't remember. I haven't seen a teeter-totter.
Oh, it's been ages.
Like, in forever.
Well, and somewhere where I used to work, they installed a brand new playground. It was amazing. And it was right next to, you know, the cafeteria where I worked. So we'd go out on breaks and we kept trying to like make the merry-go-round go fast enough to fly somebody off. Because obviously that's what we've learned later, it has brakes built in. Like,
yeah, that
it only
me.
Goes to a certain speed. Really, what's the point of that?
We're trying to achieve maximum exit velocity.
It doesn't make you throw up. It doesn't make you dizzy. You can't throw somebody off. Like, it's useless.
How else are you supposed to train for the space program?
Absolutely.
I'm trying to work on my hicking.
You're supposed to be able to take turns making people fly.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm amazed that we even survived. maybe there's something good about that, you know? Like toughened you up as a kid, like being on the monkey bars that were way too tall.
You know, a few scrapes and bruises, it's good for the character.
Yeah.
But yes, you can make your own teeter totter.
So this next topic is about woodworking projects for kids. So now we're going for like making things for the kids and then the kids making stuff with you in the shop as they get a little bit older.
Brilliant.
So the first one that I have here is a fond memory of mine, which is a sweet bike ramp.
Yeah.
I remember this was my earliest in my memory woodworking project that I got to work on. It was like press board. I designed it, you know, I put the thing together with like brad nails and drywall screws and it actually folded up. It was compact. It folded in half. So it was a square, but it was steep. It was like a foot and a half at the top edge. So yeah, I bent the frame on my fixed frame mountain bike going off this jump, but I did it. Like, it was too tall. It was scary for everybody else. They were like, no, man, it's too much. I'm like, it's so not.
I still remember for the first time I embedded gravel in my leg.
It's still there.
Yeah, probably.
Well, anyway, the reason why I bring this up is because I got a lot of freedom to help with this project. Obviously, a lot of the work on the table saw and stuff was done by my dad. But then with close supervision, I was able to put this whole thing together. So it was kind of my project. Like, you know, I designed the whole thing.
You own it so much more. Mm-hmm. You feel so much more of a connection with it. Mm-hmm. And you take better care of it.
Well, and it was the first time I started to see things as not what they were, but what they could be.
Oh, definitely.
So now I'm looking at a sheet of plywood or a 2x4 be like, I could do this and I could do that and I could put, and you start to, it begins the wheels turning if you're so inclined on the engineering side of things. How is this going to go together? What am I going to use to put it together and hold it together? Is it going to be strong? Is it going to fail here? You know, type of thing. And you start to get into that. And I think, you know, getting up to that age where, you know, you get a little bit more responsibility, you're more curious about things. That's really good because now you have to, like, I had to think about, like, what are the potential failure points in this as I'm going over the ramp? If I don't have any cross supports,
physics,
the whole thing will fold up on my bike as I go over it. So I got to make sure that the frame is sturdy, not just the outside skin of the plywood on it, you know, type of thing. So, and I'm sure that wasn't all my idea. I'm sure I got some guidance on there that I can't quite remember. But that was really cool. And I think there are all kinds of different things, depending on what it is. Like, that will be kind of organic, right? When your kid's like, I want to do this, or I want this. And be like, we could build that. I'm like, what? And then you have to, like, you know, like, look at, we could do this and get these pieces and, you know, and put it together, whatever that thing is.
Right.
The next thing that I was thinking about is swords and shields.
Classic.
So being the huge nerds that we are, we do like an occasional Renaissance fair. And like, man,
so many swords and stuff growing up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, also, we lived with trees, so sticks.
Yeah, sticks
you
enough.
You find that good stick and you keep it forever. Like,
But if you want to take it to another level, you could make your own.
Make your own
type of thing. Obviously, you know, make helmets too. Like Spartan helmets, you know, just in case.
Yeah, we totally had helmets. We were very responsible.
I didn't have helmets, but you do you. I mean, you parent how you want to parent. So
I'm 41 and I'm perfectly sane most of the time.
Both of my eyeballs somehow and all 10 fingers.
We were never allowed to aim for the head.
So I made swords and shields like crazy. Oh, yeah. And then later on wrapped them in foam and stuff and beat the hell out of my friends with them. And it was glorious.
The crucial part of going, I was into the bows and arrows.
Mm-hmm.
I was always trying to make stuff, except yarn doesn't work well. But
yeah, needed some guidance on that, how to make a Flemish bowstring, and then you're off to the races.
I know. But yeah, love the bows and arrows. But that was, again, you find that perfect stick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's like...
But that's not woodworking, and that's a whole different thing.
At its core, like LARPing, like the live-action role play where people like beat each other with like sticks wrapped in foam. Like, this is where it comes from. Like, everybody wants to be like the Katniss Everdeen and the, you know, all the kids from the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
You want to relive your childhood, or if you didn't get to do that when you were a child, you want to do that.
Well, once you...
It's fun.
...read or read the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, you want a sword and a shield. Like,
I was like three.
There's no way around it. You're just like, I need to be armed. Like, if this...
That's true. No, I wanted to be Susan with a bow and arrow.
Yeah, there you go.
And yeah, that definitely wasn't the first book that my dad read to me when I was like one.
Mm-hmm. But this could be, certainly could be a fun project, right?
And yes,
like swords and shields and stuff like that.
And safety wise, moving on to catapults.
Yes, yes.
Trebuchets also.
Absolutely, like that's another level because the catapult is much simpler.
It's true. The trebuchet, like I'm not good with all those physics.
But if you're down to make a trebuchet, I will help make you. I will help make
we
a trebuchet
with you. We need to make
friends
with the neighbor kids so we can send it like all the way down the line of backyards.
So, you know, keeping in mind the whole like making money thing, like there, you know, you go to a good Renaissance fair, there are whole booths like filled with every variety of sword made out of wood that you and shield that you can think of.
Oh yeah.
And they have catapults of various sizes.
You never underestimate when you're going to need a good catapult.
Well, and it's basically like a wooden kitchen spoon, you know, shoved in some rubber bands and twisted up. Yeah. And, you know, you start launching marshmallows with them.
Yeah.
And it's just good, clean fun.
Obviously.
And also you get to know a little bit about medieval siege warfare.
Yeah. It's like homeschooling physics. This is definitely not how I learned physics as a child.
Break out the Legos. We're going to learn some physics, kids.
And the marshmallows.
Yeah.
The marshmallow crossbow.
Yeah, so I remember buying one of these at a Renaissance fair, and it was great because, like, you aim a marshmallow crossbow. You aim a regular crossbow at somebody, that like, you know, they shriek and seek cover. You aim a marshmallow crossbow at somebody, they just, like, look at you and open their mouths.
No, my grandpa made us crossbow, but it was for ping pong balls.
I've seen those, too.
He gave us a load of ping pong balls. It was so much fun. We were not allowed to aim at each other's heads.
I'm sure you didn't aim at anyone's heads.
Oh, my parents were strict. The toys came away if the heads got hit.
Uh-oh. Yeah, the marshmallow one's
we
fun.
We couldn't afford the ER visit if an eye got hit. So, below the neck only.
Supervision
so
required.
So much fun.
Well, and like for the catapult, it's like setting up targets and seeing like
supervision
how many
paddling later.
You know, how many turns do I need to hit it like dead on, you know, whatever. And you have like, you know, marbles or something you're shooting or something like that. Not at people. But
I probably
at
still
targets.
Have it in the thing. We could try it with it just needs some new rubber bands.
What, the marshmallow crossbow?
Well, the ping pong. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It probably just needs a new rubber band.
They're kind of tricky
to
make, though.
Evening date night.
They're kind of tricky to make, though, because you have to have it. Just right, like marshmallow is a big projectile to throw straight.
It's the same size as a ping pong ball.
All right, if you're not into projectiles and weapons. another
That's
option.
Okay.
board games.
Obviously.
Huge board game nerds here.
No.
Yeah, big time.
Never.
Yes. So there's a whole bunch of them. There's one of them, I can't remember the name of it. A friend of mine told me about it, but it has like a couple of like steps, like down steps, and you roll dice down it, and wherever they land, you score points.
Interesting.
And that's like a super, and there's like some pegs and stuff that help stop the dice if you hit them just right. And that would be super, super easy to make.
Indeed.
Out of
wood.
Good
project with children.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking like other things like Shut the Box or Baseball, which is another dice game, and some other wooden games. There's what is the one?
There's endless peg games.
Well, it looks like there's one of them that looks like table hockey, but it's with the hockey pucks are about the size of a checkers piece. And then there's a rubber band in either side and then like a tiny slot in the middle. And so you fling these little
checkers
pieces and you try to get all of yours through the slot into your opponent's side before your opponent gets all of theirs into your side.
Well, that should move up on the list because I want to do this for date night.
Yeah, okay. But that's one you could easily make. That would
for
be
sure.
fun. I saw another one.
And also very easily make with your kid.
Yes. I saw another one and it was... I was walking through somewhere and I saw it in a church preschool on the floor, and it looked like it had been broken and it was in need of repair. But it was circular, and there was a little sunken tray all the way around, and like a raised platform in the middle that was ringed with metal pegs. And I can't remember if there was like a zone in the middle. And it looked like a weird version of like tiny shuffleboard or something with many different players all going at once or something, trying to fight for the middle, like King
How
of the
interesting.
Hill. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you could find, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Or make up your own if you're really creative.
Hey, those are really good games.
Yeah.
Especially for winter.
What do we have next?
Also birdhouses.
Birdhouses.
Classic. Make sure you research what bird you want.
You could get really crazy with these. You could inspire the architect in your child.
Yes.
Starting with the birdhouse.
And starting with the bird.
Yeah.
Like, what birds are you wanting to attract? Because, as you were telling me earlier, the size of the hole makes a difference.
Yes, it does. No, it does. So, depending on the bird species, okay, certain birds are bigger than others. So, if you want to attract a certain one... they require, you know, a certain size one. So if you want to exclude some of the bigger, like if you don't want a robin, but you do want a smaller variety, you make the hole too small for a robin to get through.
Right.
And then you won't get that breed. And then it just depends on that. You know, you do some research too, because some are more territorial than others.
Yes.
And then what a really cool thing that you could do now that cameras are so cheap. Is you could get a wired or wireless camera and hook it up somehow to a TV or something in the back of the birdhouse.
Yes.
And actually get to see, you know, in...
If any of you are homeschoolers, this is an excellent, like, full year project or an excellent summer project.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you build the bird's house and put the camera in, and then you have, like, spring and summer. It's... physics and woodworking and science and biology, and it's amazing.
And you could dress up that house however you want.
Yes.
You'd be like, well, we're going to have the foyer, and then we'll have the master bedroom here, and then the sitting area here and the lounge over here and whatever.
So fancy. I want a Purple Martin birdhouse because they eat mosquitoes like there is no tomorrow. I think we have purple martins. I'm not sure if I've ever seen one, but I want to build a house for them so that they come.
We could do that. Well, the other thing we talked about was bat boxes.
I also want that. Martins can eat the mosquitoes during the day, and the bats can eat them at night.
Yes, after
and then
dusk.
All the mosquitoes will be gone to hell where they belong.
You don't seem to have a strong feeling about mosquitoes at all.
They're evil.
I hate mosquitoes too. Oh gosh.
It's like an additional plague that didn't get labeled.
It's still like one of the leading causes of human mortality.
They carry bad things.
They do. They suck.
Anyways, sculpture.
You totally missed my pun, didn't you?
I did.
I said they suck.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow. Wow.
Anyway, birdhouses are a good idea.
Yes, birdhouses are a great idea. Additionally, sculpture. How do you do woodworking with sculpture?
Well, if you just want to slap some stuff together and make a wooden robot guy or whatever, you can dig into your scraps bin in the wood shop and sort
of
glue stuff together. And certainly, like, depending on the age group, right, you're going to limit tool usage. You know, you're not going to be like, all right, Timmy, here's the brad nailer, even though you're three. Go nuts, you know?
Yeah, maybe not. Depends on the intelligence of the child.
But, you know, glue, you could do glue.
Glue is perfect. At least a little bit of skin.
And with
way.
Some help, you know, and everything, you could certainly do that. Actually, if you wanted to avoid a lot of interesting messes and things like that, what you can do is get some working hands, like hand salve or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Rub it on your hands before you get into this. And essentially, it serves as like a release. So things can't stick to your skin as well. And it will come off like pretty much all in one piece. If you've got that like kind of slathered on there. And it will also moisturize your skin on your hands.
Oh, very good.
So I use that and it just helps. Like, especially if you're going to be doing something like nasty or greasy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It helps all of that wash off because it doesn't really like adhere to your skin because it's already something there in between,
right?
That's like a moisture barrier, which is what that is, and it's kind of similar to paste wax, so you know it's good, but it's got some moisturizing
like
stuff
how you can like scrape your nails over a soap bar before you work in the garden.
Yep, basically the same thing.
Nice.
You're just adding like a sort of like oil based lotion kind of stuff onto
since
your hands.
They don't
first.
Really make gloves small enough for children.
Well, you know, they're gonna want to get into it. Just
for
make sure they're not
licking.
Just make
it.
Sure they're not licking their fingers as they go through.
Yum.
Type on number three you tastes better than the other two.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but sculpture would be fun because then it's kind of, you know, whatever you want. And then especially if you have a bunch of odd shapes and stuff in your scrap bin, you know, your because like I have a metal trash can that's my scrap bin, which is all the stuff that's destined for the burn pit. And you could definitely dig through that and find all kinds of odd things and put together something cool depending on what you wanted to do. So if you're artistically inclined, you could do some sculpture.
And if you're not, you can buy a laser kit,
mm-hmm.
which is also fun.
Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of laser kits out there.
Yeah, I want to get one for the bookshelf. Interior thing.
Oh, I have seen
those. You
can
punch out all the things and it already comes with all the little lanterns and stuff.
And texture and everything.
Yes, and all the holes for the little lights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very nice. So you could do that, your bookend thing that we talked about. Birdhouses, there's little mechanical things. Like I had a marble run that I was gifted and re-gifted and you'd turn a little,
it's all the little cogs and everything.
Well, it came with a little chunk of paraffin wax, so you would lube up the gears and as you turned it, it would actuate the marble run and keep them going.
So
and it was very fun.
We still have that.
So there's all kinds of good things.
Yeah.
You can do with laser kits that are fairly simple. Didn't our nephew want a laser kit safe?
No, he just wanted a safe.
He just wanted a safe. Isn't that what they ended up getting him, though, the laser kit?
No, he got a safe.
He just got a safe.
He's an oldest child. You got to protect your stuff from your younger siblings.
He's going to grow up to be a safe cracker.
I mean, as an oldest child, we can both confirm that sometimes you just want to
stay. Stay away from my stuff, you guys.
I only want a couple things.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of laser kits and stuff like that. And that's fairly simple because then all you're really doing is like, literally you could use Elmer's glue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's all you're doing is gluing the bits and stuff
together.
And the
kits usually come together. So those are also fun gifts sometimes when it's more hands-on. It's not just like another toy. It's something you actually have to use some creative stuff to build, and it often allows a little bit of leeway for individuality and creativity.
Yeah. It's not exactly woodworking, but it's kind of an introduction to like that material.
Yep.
I mean, most of that stuff is made out of MDF, which is it calling it wood is pushing it. But technically it is.
But if you want a quick thing that's a little more on the wood side than the plastic side and requires a little more brain power than just another plastic toy. Those are really fun.
And a lot of them are press kit too, so you don't even necessarily need to use glue.
Yep. And then there's the standard plaques and frames and display things.
Yeah, you could upgrade something, like say a trophy or something like that with a little bit more robust stand or something like that.
You could have your kids make their own trophy display cabinets.
I don't know about a full cabinet. That's pretty ambitious. But if they're already making cabinets at whatever age, you know, they might have a bright future in cabinetry or something like that.
I mean, there's always those pine car derby cars.
That is true.
You know, I made two of them and one of them actually like won that year. So nice. I am very proud.
Hey,
Dad helped me paint both of those and make them and, you know.
And it is a woodworking project. So there you go.
It is. Good stuff.
Yeah, plaques, frames, displays of any kind, like a little pedestal or something like that is nice, especially for like trophies and pictures or anything that you want to mount and display on a wall. To get them involved with that is really cool. So with any of these, supervision obviously is super important. You want to make sure that you're supervising the whole way through, depending on your comfort level and their maturity level, age, everything, taken into consideration. Using appropriate tools, I would say like things like letting them use saws to cut boards in half before anything that's really sharp, like a chisel, or certainly not power tools, right? You know, it's like the right order of things.
Well, and your dexterity only develops at a certain point too, so.
Right. But, you know, there's certain things you could probably let them try
for sure
with supervision before other things. And safety gear, always important. It's good to teach them early on and also demonstrate for them that, you know, hearing protection, eye protection, gloves, and whatever else you're going to use, you know, is always important. You want to keep that. There's a reason why we wear those things.
They might miss the end of their finger a little bit more than you would.
Mm-hmm. Tool training. So this is something that kids have gotten forever, say like, you know, Boy Scouts kind of things, like don't cut towards yourself and stuff like that. They start getting pocket knives and getting to mess around with that kind of stuff. And certainly just getting used to being aware of the dangers there and understanding how to use something and to avoid any mishaps.
The tool, not good. Toy scenario.
Yes, it's a tool, not a toy. It's only going to do what you tell it to, but obviously you have to know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So teaching them how to use things and starting to build that skill set and everything is really good and it's challenging.
Still important so early on.
Sharp tool awareness, obviously, that's age appropriate, right? When you decide that it's time to introduce maybe the baby's first pocket knife.
Yeah. Hey, they admit you can have your like 2-year-old in the kitchen cutting vegetables with you. It's so much safer if they actually know the parameters.
I still have my very first pocket knife I was ever given.
Oh, so do I.
And it is a like 1.5-inch tiny little buck folding knife.
Mine is a Klein.
And I started whittling with that.
It's 3 inches long.
And I just recently polished it up and I found it and I gave it some love.
I don't remember where it is.
Polished it and sharpened it again. So good fond memories with that.
Indeed.
I don't remember what age I got that at though. Obviously, having an emergency plan and knowing what to do when you do get a little cut or a nick or something like that, trying to avoid those is important. And then definitely about like one, an important one is teaching patience as you're going through stuff, like understand like all the pieces and stuff, you know, don't necessarily go together that quickly or, you know, if you're teaching them how to whittle or something like that, like, okay, well, you got to take it a little bit at a time. Yeah, it takes time or whatever you're working with. But all really good things, I think, that help challenge the brain and develop you a little bit more in that way.
Indeed.
Of course, like early on, you can always do like a cooking show where you prep in advance all the pieces, parts, and then whatever level the kids are at for the project, you know, you would let them glue the bits, but then you brad nail it in or you cut all the pieces and then they get to help assemble with that stuff or put the screws in. Certainly, I got to use the power drill and put screws in things before I got the brad nailer. Because the brad nailer is its own creature, right?
Yes.
And if you know your way around a brad nailer, sometimes those nails hit things, they do weird stuff.
Yes. And also even just like the strength, like holding the machinery and being able to control kickback. Like, it's not that they're not developmentally ready. It's some things might still be just literally too big for them.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But, you know, let's say driving screws, safer than, you know, an air nail gun.
We haven't seen that movie anywhere.
And then, or just hammering them in with an actual hammer instead of a pneumatic tool or something like that. So, good ways to develop and see if your kids have an interest in all that good stuff.
Super fun.
And also some good ideas in case that you wanted to make something either as a gift or something you wanted to sell.
Yeah. Either, memories that will last forever, obviously.
local or wider spread, like on something like Etsy. Well, that'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to check out some of the pictures that we have online for some of the projects that we are working on, you can find us at bosunscall.com. You can also join us on Patreon for free or for a few shillings to keep this voyage underway. We thank you very much for joining us, and we hope to hear you next time. Thanks. Take care. Bye.